Hey, what's going on, folks? Ty here, Bench Clear Media. Today, I talked to Marcel from the Awesome Card Shop. This will be a conversation that you will love because we dig into some really tough topics, like the mindset of the buyers and sellers right now. Some things that I think even hobby shop owners are realizing that they have to do to make it work in the hobby. We talk about some good deals that he made, his strategy going into the national and how it panned out at the end, prices he's paying, products he's liking, players he's liking. I think if you're into the hobby right now and you're trying to find the edge, if you will, this will be a great 45 minutes for you to spend listening and just grabbing some tidbits of wisdom from a guy who knows this hobby. I've known Marcel a long time, and this guy just speaks with complete transparency, which is super helpful for collectors, investors, whatever you are in this hobby. It's super helpful. So be sure to go check out the Awesome Card Shop if you're in Las Vegas, or just go online and follow him on his Instagram, Facebook, whatever platform that you like. Also, if you're not subscribed to Chasing Cardboard, please go do that. The link is in the top right corner. You can go watch all of our recent episodes. We reference it in a lot of videos. Mike, myself, Matt, Tyson, we're all a part of it. It's been one heck of a journey. We put a lot of work into that, and we'd love your support on that show. So anyway, enjoy this conversation today with Marcel and have yourself a good week. See you. Yes! What's up, Marcel? How are you?
What is up? Ty Wilson in the house. How you doing, buddy?
Are you in your closet? Are you in your sports card? Are you in the Awesome Card Shop closet?
Yeah, typical hobby shop back room action right here behind us. AKA the same thing my bedroom looks like.
Yeah, exactly. You and me both. All right, let's start with the biggest news that just came out, and that's Juan Soto going to the Padres. I want just your immediate reaction to that. What did you think when you saw the news?
So that just happened like 15 minutes ago or 20 minutes ago? Right. Dude, well, first of all, I would have liked him to end up as a Dodger. Yeah. But I knew that I think the Dodgers and the Cardinals and the Padres were the front runners at the end. Cardinals did not want to let go of what's his name, Carlson.
Yep.
What's the first name of the? Is Dylan. It Dylan?
Dylan. Yeah.
Right. He's a beast. Like I wouldn't let him go either. Yeah. But I knew Dodgers would have had to give up a lot. Dodgers are a pretty good team the way they are right now. But can you imagine Tatis and Soto in the same lineup, healthy,
crazy,
with Machado right there. Even though I don't like Machado's antics and like the way he does his off the field stuff,
yeah,
dude, that 2-3-4 or 3-4-5,
goodness, just stupid,
so ridiculous.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. I mean, California is stacked with talent right now. All those teams.
It's true.
You could make a case that like 7 or 8 of the top 10 players are residing in California right now.
It's so true. You're right. You're right. You put in the Freddie Freemans, the Mike Trouts, the Otanis. Nothing like Kansas City's team.
Yeah. I don't even start to try to jab me with Kansas City jokes, okay? I'll take my Bobby Witt Jr. and our quaint little baseball team, okay? And our World Series.
Dude, I just had a beautiful Alex Gordon Topps Chrome. It's a white, it's a white card, white border card, okay, with an autograph. It's his rookie sitting there in my display case at the National, front and center.
You waiting sell it? For
it did not sell. Wow. I was waiting for you, bro.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Well, which leads me into the point of our conversation today. You have been a dealer so for folks that don't know Marcel, you've been on the show many times. You own a prevalent, popular card shop in Las Vegas called the Awesome Card Shop. You've been around a long time. You've also been a dealer at the National for a long time. So you and I had a brief conversation a couple of days ago, and we thought, let's have a conversation live just about your thoughts on the National from a dealer's perspective. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. Let's start with the obvious question, and that is, it's hard to compare it to last year because last year was an anomaly. when you got home today, took a deep breath, how did you feel about the National this year?
You know, on the way down here, you should get him on the show. He's a wealth of knowledge. On the way down here, I was talking to Matt Fettergreen. He's one of my oldest buddies in the hobby. He owns Beverly Hills Baseball Card Shop. And I don't know. It's been around forever. I don't know if it's like 40 years or something. I'd say one of the oldest probably card shops in the country, if I had to guess. But I was talking to him and we were talking about the sediment of the hobby. And it's very good. It's very good. If I reflect back on this show, the sediment is strong. You know, I was thinking that it would very much mimic what's happened in the stock market. There's that old saying that says, what is it exactly, that what happens in the stock market happens in the economy 3 to 6 months later. And we all know there's been some selling off and there's been some heavy price drops of recent. And I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't know if everybody was going to be there and it was just going to be a free for all of this. The sediment was very strong. You know, right now people can't sell their crypto fast enough. And their stocks, people have been dumping stocks for quite some time now. But when we went to the show, there was a lot more sellers than last year. But last year, like you said, was kind of an anomaly. And all in all, the sediment was very strong. Lots of new money into the hobby, big money, big companies. Everybody's trying to innovate at the same time. People are trying to innovate fractional share companies, creator avenues, small licensed card companies. There's like three or four graders now that set up at the National that weren't there 2 years ago, and they don't look like they're going anywhere. There's a lot of new money, and I don't think it's going anywhere. So I was very happy. Sentiment was strong.
Well, and some of this is, you know, full transparency. You and I talk a lot. So I knew going into the show, you were really uncertain because the vibe at the shop recently has been just a barrage of people trying to sell stuff to you. And it sounds like shops around you were also, I mean, basically cutting off buys because so many people were trying to sell. Did you feel like the amount of sellers at the National was healthy? Or do you feel like there was a good enough balance of buying and selling that it made you feel pretty good about the next 6 months to a year?
I feel like it was a healthy amount. So you're right. Prior to going there, I had spoken to you about locally here how it's been like selling Niagara Fall, you know, like just like everybody wants to sell. And yeah. I'm getting calls at the shop. I was telling you, I was getting calls where people were asking me, are you buying? And I wasn't buying because I was trying to set up for the National and so many people were selling and it was overwhelming. Didn't even have time to do my daily stuff I need to do at the shop. So I was just telling people I'm not buying right now. And when I told them that on the phone, the people on the phone would say to me, well, what's going on? Why is nobody in Vegas buying? I called every shop in town. And so I thought the same thing was going to happen at the National, where it would just be like this overflow of sellers that would just crush the show and there'd be no buying. But
yeah,
it was healthy. It was healthy. What I saw is a lot of people looked on Wednesday, they looked on Thursday, and they started buying Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Last year, right, everybody was like, oh, whatever I buy will be worth double by the end of the week. So they just came and bought everything. Yeah. So the set, I'd say if the National speaks any truth to what we're in for the next 3 to 6 months, we're probably in for a healthy market. But as you know, there's all these variables right now floating around in the world economy that,
yeah,
I'm just not sure. But yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that from a seller's perspective, were you able to get good deals?
Yes, that has changed. Again, okay. last year was different. So what happened this year was very much like the years before. But I actually think it teetered a little bit more in the favor of the dealer. So just like the housing market, I think this year was very much a buyer's market, meaning a dealer's market. I was able to procure deals at a slightly better percentage than I've been able to for the last two Nationals.
Okay.
Maybe even three.
Like when you're heading into a show in this economic climate, I mean, what are you telling your guys and what are you looking for in particular? Like what kind of deals came to you and you're like, okay, we got to get this done. What was it specifically? Certain sports, certain players, certain types of cards? What was piquing your interest?
Well, so what we decided, because so many people were selling, have been selling here back home, I told my crew that we were only buying up-and-coming mega stars and iconic players. I did not buy one single fluff card. So we bought Jordan, Burrow, Herbert, Curry, right?
Wow.
Anybody and anything that was iconic, truly iconic, or an up-and-coming mega star. That's the only thing I was willing to entertain. But again, the rate at which I was able to purchase was better than it's been the last two or three shows. People wanted to sell. And I didn't have to push them in that direction. You know, we're very forthright about the way we buy.
Yeah,
we tell people what the card is worth, and then we make our offer, and people were just taking our offers.
Wow, normal rate at from a dealer's perspective is what, 70% off, 60% off?
So most people for good cards, I would say at the National pay about 70 to 75% at the National the last few years. Okay. So, and we're not talking about mega cards. I'm not talking about like a multi-thousand dollar crazy, just nice solid cards, 100 to 500 of stars and up and coming stars and iconic players, et cetera. 70 to 75% is usually where it hovers. And I was buying them for like 60, 65%.
Dang.
In a few instances lower than that, and I was completely upright about what I was willing to pay, and the seller just sold. So I think what happened is people were willing. They knew the market had changed, they knew the market had dropped, and they just wanted to sell. They didn't care that they had lost money. I'll tell you something. I'm in the same boat. I bought like 10 Kobe White National Treasures rookie patch autos like a year ago.
And I remember that deal.
even though Kobe hasn't played well, the market is also right. Market took a turn. And I just didn't care, man. I lost a bunch of money and I don't want to hold the card. And at some point, whether you're a dealer or a hobbyist, you just want to get out of the card, right? You just want to get some of your money back and do whatever it is you want to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I hear that, and I don't necessarily think that bodes well for the short term. Like I hear that and I think, okay, people are realizing that there is not a lot of strength in the market and they're willing just to get rid of stuff. As a seller, I'm thinking, well, gosh darn, we need to get some more strength back in the hobby because you're not going to be able to sell for much outside of the handful of players that are just out, you know, one of a kind, which is the way the hobby, I guess, has always been. So it's kind of hard to say, oh, well, gosh darn, we're back to where we were, but we are back to where we were. We're back to the normal sports card industry.
It's true. I mean, you know, I'm sure you must have talked about this on the show before, but the guys who came in during COVID, when everything you bought would just be worth more and more and more.
Yeah,
there was a lot of people who were just here for that. Not a ton, but there was enough, right? Like I met a bunch of guys who used to be in the sneaker flipping business.
Yeah.
They were now in the card flipping business. And guys who were in all sorts of different collectibles and they would flip and they were now in cards. And there was just a lot of people who were there for that. And that's all been petered out now. Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, like I said, sentiment was strong. There was a lot of people. I mean, the amount of people, the sheer amount of people running through the convention was super strong. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was like, it was literally like Disneyland. It was shoulder, shoulder, elbow, excuse me, move. Like if you wanted to get through an aisle, like you had to work to get through that aisle. There was a lot of people there.
Wow.
And come Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they were spending money. So,
yeah, that's a great thing. A great thing. What you mentioned to me on the phone conversation about trading, how trading is becoming kind of a sneaky little phenomena. Like there's a resurgence of this idea of trading. What were you sensing with the idea of trading at the National?
So this started again. This started way back, but it's not going away anytime soon. Trading's always been a big part of the hobby, right? It's always been a big part, but the younger generation, okay, when you go to these hotel lobbies after the National and you see these trade nights going on, like 90% of the people laid out with their cards, lobbies at hotels full of cards, just laid out on the floor in the hallways. They're all like 25 and under. Right? Like kids in their early to mid 20s, and they're trading like crazy. So the one thing I hadn't seen prior to the last 2-3 years, I would rarely get people come up to my booth and ask me if I want to trade. It was, are you buying? Or they'd make a purchase. The last two Nationals, this one and the one before, and then there wasn't, and then I don't even remember now. Was there one before? They skipped it because of COVID, I think. But the last two Nationals, there's just so many people trying to trade with you, you know, and that's the game. I mean, that trading game, you know, it's like, can I buy this paperclip, trade it for a penny, trade the penny for a nickel, trade the nickel for a card, trade the card for a baseball bat, trade the baseball bat, you know what I mean, for a jersey. And then, so it's like, they're very much into that. Locally for you, how are trade nights going? Trade nights, I mean, I had Legacy for like 15 years. We ran trade nights on and off throughout the years. It was work to get people in. Now you throw a sign up, you say trade night. And there's all these kids, all these youngsters showing up. What about in your local market? Do you see any of that?
There's not enough of a market around here to have successful trade nights, but we are seeing, like at the Missoula card show in Montana, the trade night was as active as I've seen it at any show for the night before the show. So yeah, I mean, even in Missoula, Montana, the trade night is exceptional. So yeah, I hear you. I don't remember trade nights 15 years ago being a thing, and I was in the hobby just as much. So it's kind of cool to me to see. And even at the National, or I guess take a step back, I ran a booth in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a couple weeks ago. I had more people come up to me and say, hey, would you be willing? Do you want this card? And I'm gonna be like, I want that card. Would you trade for it? And they would want to trade a graded Justin Herbert for wax packs, you know, cello packs of Prism football. And I'm thinking, as a dealer, that's a no-brainer, right? I already know what I got there. I'll trade you for wax all day long.
All day. Yep.
But is it? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and that whole thing is everybody knows what they paid for what they have, and what they can sell. So it's fun, but you know what? We this guy once said it at the shop, and now we use it here. we always like to make fun of what he said. The guy walked in and we asked him what he PCs, and he said to us, "I only PC money." And so I told the guys, that's our motto for the show, right? We PC money. So people want to trade, that's fine. I love it. But we did zero trades. I told people, you want to sell to me, I will buy. You want to buy from me, I will sell. But I just don't have time for trades. And I didn't do any trades.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You're like Clint Eastwood on someone. Don't step on my front lawn with your trade. Jeez, oh, grumpy man. Old man.
Yeah, wait, I got to tell you, you know what else we did that was super cool?
Huh.
Some people would say horrible idea, but I didn't care. We decided this year, I decided, we did not do a single buy Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I told everybody that came up to my booth for all those days, come back on Sunday, we're buying all day Sunday. And what I did was, all those other days through the National, you're bombarded with buys and people are constantly walking up to your table. Hey, can I see this card? They want to purchase, right? But you're at the back of the table or the center of the booth, and you're trying to do like a big deal or make a purchase, and you're not able to tend to your customer, right? You got a customer that wants to buy, but you're doing a deal with a seller and you lose that customer. So I told my guys, I said, you know, I don't know how it'll work out, but we're going to pay 100% attention to all our buyers for every day leading up to the last day. And on the last day, people pack up early anyways.
Yeah.
And I felt that anyone who's really still really trying to sell on Sunday, it's probably because they want some money. They probably spent a bunch of money at the National.
Yeah.
And it worked out tremendously for us. Tremendously. Our numbers were so strong this year. And we were able to take care of every single purchaser the whole time. Didn't have to deal with buying all the days leading up to the last day. And on the last day, we crushed it on our buys. Super strong buys. Yeah.
That's, I mean, you always come up with great business ideas, but that seems like a absolute home run idea. Yeah, because then you hold the keys to the kingdom, right? You have all the leverage on Sunday. You have a very little leverage on Wednesday, Thursday.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, right, it's 1+1. You get there on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and you're like, oh, I've got all weekend to sell this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Then it comes Friday, and you're like, shucks, I haven't sold this stuff. I want to get rid of it. I came here to get rid of it, or I spent too much money, and you got to sell.
Yeah. So. You just said shucks. Did you just watch an episode of Andy Griffith or something? I mean, who uses that word,
dude? Yeah. Oh man, that's what happens when you have kids, man.
That's right. You have to come up with the oldies, the old words.
There's no cussing around my kids, so
I dig
shucks.
It.
Shucks is the word, man.
All right, fair enough. What was the best buy that you had on that last day? Anything come to mind?
I know that I bought one lot that had everything I just named you earlier. I bought a lot. It had Herbert, all graded. Herbert graded rookies, Burrow graded rookies. And it had some Jordan, like second and third year graded. And I forgot what else. I cherry picked it. I took all the players I wanted. And I offered the guy 58% and he took it.
And that, are you comping based off eBay sales? Is that what your standard is still? Recent comps?
Yeah. But hey, Ty, have you heard of Alt?
Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. It's good. Right.
Yeah.
So, we used Alt and we used eBay and Terapeak for the most part.
Yep.
And for those of you, obviously, that don't know, Alt, you just take a picture of something, of a graded card,
yep,
and it tells you what it goes for. But when it tells you what it goes for, if the little line is green, that means that the surety of it being accurate is good. Yeah. Orange is like, hey, we're not sure. And red is like, go look it up on eBay. But I had both. I'd have my phone out taking pictures. And while my phone was loading, I'd be working on my computer looking up on Terapeak and eBay. So that's what we were using. But the technology with these companies now, like to be able to take a picture, it's getting really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you about the companies here in a second, but I guess what about in terms of sales? Did you sell some big cards? What was the big sell that you had? And I guess maybe even more granular, what do you feel like was selling the best while you were at the show this year?
Our best seller was basketball.
Okay.
We had a lot of graded basketball, mostly PSA. We had stacks, nothing intergalactic cards, 500 and under, but we had tons of stacks. We had like five stacks each, from bottom to top of the showcase, maybe 10, 12 cards per stack. Curry, LeBron, Kobe, and I think Jordan. And so people ran through those stacks like there was no business. We did not manage to sell any of our high ticket items. I don't know how other dealers did, but all our multi-$1,000 cards, like I'd say 3,000 and over, we did not sell one of those.
Holy crap.
Yeah, our threshold this show was 2,000 and under, but the cards that were 500 and under were just flying off the shelf. And again, they were graded 10s, like Curry second year and third year, nice inserts, refractors, my house, right? Like my house purples, graded 10, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that's what we sold best. And Pokemon. Oh my gosh. Dude. So 15 years with Legacy before I sold it, I barely touched Pokemon.
Yeah.
Now we've got a whole section at the new awesome card shop, my new shop for Pokemon. I took that to the show. Those three cases got obliterated. Like I went with three cases stacked this high. I came back with like a case and a half. Like,
wow.
So much Pokemon sold at the show.
That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. I do find it really interesting that you did not sell any big ticket items, because you normally have some really good stuff that I feel like every year you come back and tell me some big things moved at the National. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, and the guys I set up with were singing the same song. So at least the guys in my immediate area were singing the same song. But I'm sure people moved some big cards. Maybe it was just the way the show flowed for us this year. But again, volume and velocity was very strong.
Yeah. Yeah, I do wonder if a lot of that is a lot of the big ticket items, even like a Jordan rookie, right? When you lose 40% on a $500,000 card, it stings. When you lose 40% on a $500 card, you kind of just move on and get the next card. So I wonder if a lot of that's just like buyer's remorse to a certain extent from like the potential of losing more money on higher dollar cards. I don't know. Quick theory. But
I don't know about everybody else, but I was, listen, on the ones that I, okay, so on the cards that have taken a strong dip, I tried. So our thing here is, I always tell my guys, we're the awesome card shop, we're not the awesome museum. So that means that we try to sell our cards at what they go for. I don't need top dollar. If it's a $400 to $500 card, we're selling for $450. Like, I just need what it goes for.
Yeah.
But with those cards that we took a hit on, big hits, and I imagine a lot of people do the same. If it's a $400 to $500 card, I try to get 500 and I just don't give, because I already lost 200 on it, right?
Yeah.
I already took a hit on it. So maybe that was happening across the board on bigger cards. And just like you said, right? In the meanwhile, you said that, and I, I bought a Kobe White for like $4,000. I sold it for $600 at the show. Yeah, so I don't care, man.
The trick is to keep moving, right? Keep that money working for you. It's sitting there, doesn't do anything for anybody.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the corporate sponsors. You told me that it was sold out. It's already sold out for next year. What do you think this idea of lots of money coming in from the corporate side, what do you think that tells us about the hobby? Is it too little, too late? Is it just the late reaction to the hobby exploding? That's my theory. I think it just took a while for corporations and platforms to develop after seeing the explosion in the hobby. What is your take on just the insanity with corporations and new names entering the hobby?
I mean, I had the exact same thought. I was thinking to myself, you know, hey, look, you and I did something similar, right? We had a great idea. There was an explosion. We created a company. And we were a little too late, right? It's like you're either early or you're late, right? If you're not early, you're late. And we were late. And so I think some of the money that's flowing in and some of these big players, these big companies, these fractional share companies, these companies that will vault your cards and loan you a percentage on the cards that are vaulted. Some of these NFT companies, like I honestly think, some of them, they're probably late to the party. But it still bodes well. I mean, when you have an industry where a lot of institutional money or big money, let's say, is coming in and creating new innovations to make the hobby better, at the end of the day, even if some of those don't peter out, it's good, right? It's good for the hobby.
Yeah. And your final thought there was that it's good for the hobby. Ultimately, it's good for the hobby. And I do agree with you there for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
But, you know, I wanted to tell you there was this set of cards, and I just want people to hear the story. I told you.
Yeah.
There was a set of cards. It's 2000, it's like 2018 or 17, PMG's Marvel Fleer cards. And I was talking to a dealer that was telling me that the raw set of these cards, number to 199, sold for $20,000, like 9 months ago, raw. And now you can get, like, there was a set the other day, yesterday, went off yesterday, SGC overall grade of 8.5, didn't even get a bid on it for 5,000. Raw 20,000, graded 8.5 today, can't even get a bid for 5,000. Everyone's heard these stories, but just being there and seeing that, and then knowing what happened with my Kobe Whites, and you know, I mean, things have definitely, it's not even a dip. There's in certain areas, it's a crash, right? If you pay $20,000 for a raw set and a greater than a half doesn't even get five, what is your raw set worth now? Is it 2,000?
Yeah.
If you pay 20,000, it's worth 2,000. That's an absolute.
Yeah. 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 You're right. And that we don't talk about that enough, but I think in like areas of there's pockets of the hobby where there was just so few buyers. People got so distracted by the sales numbers and didn't realize like there was not a lot of demand. It was artificially being pumped. And when you strip out that handful of buyers that existed for those specific cards, there's nobody left to buy. Nobody wants it. Like, it doesn't happen with a Juan Soto. It doesn't happen with a Michael Jordan. But for certain areas of the market, the demand just disappeared.
You're dead right. You're
crazy. Yep.
You hit it on the dot. You're dead right about that. Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't know. Have you? Oh, what's that?
I was gonna say, it's a nice, depressing thought to end on there.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. No, it's not depressing. It's just part of the hobby, man.
It's reality. Yep.
It's just whatever you're in, any industry you're in, you know, things go up, things go down, whether it's a commodity, it's gas, it's natural gas, it's the stock market, whatever it is, things go up and down. You take your licks, you keep moving, you sell, you innovate, and you know, you keep doing what you have to do. But I was going to tell you, have you ever seen so many grading companies? When I got into the hobby, people used to tell me, you know, you'd see these holders, right? Like you'd see the GAI holder, right?
Yeah.
Or there was the, what's that company? It looks like PSA, but the label's red. It's from like 25 years ago. Is it like CSA?
Yeah.
Or PAS or something. And I'd hear about these flyby nights that just don't exist anymore. Man, there's like four or five legit companies with huge booths, plenty of money, good personnel behind them, grading cards now. I'm very interested to see how that plays out. This is my take. I think that HGA with their new ownership is going to be a player in the market. And I wholeheartedly believe that CSG, right? That's the company that's working with eBay. Is that right? They're going to legitimize that label, that partnership. If you fast forward 2-3 years from now, I think that label is going to be a strong label. Their partnership with eBay is going to bring value to those cards. And I'm looking forward. I'm going to be trying to do a lot of work with that. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the marketplace will tell us which slabs, which grading companies will exist in 3 or 4 years, because it doesn't matter like what we think about HGA and like there's like if their company solidified things internally, like if the market doesn't want to pay a premium for the slab, HGA won't be around in 2 years, you know, like it just won't happen. Like from HGA's perspective, they have so much crap to dig out of. Like, I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, because the market's basically said, screw you guys. you couldn't figure things out after a year and a half. I love SGC. I'm a big SGC fan. Their vintage market's already solidified. Their modern prices are starting to come up a little bit, but BGS apparently had a pretty good show too. You know, like they're trying to figure out a way to come back. Their new flip's apparently making some waves. I don't know how things shake out, but I think there's probably going to be some acquisitions, some partnerships and things like that. I mean, I still think it's a 3-man game between BGS, PSA and SGC, but probably SGC, CGS. Can we come up with different letters? Can we throw in another letter, please? I mean, now that I talk about this, can we throw a Z or a Y in there?
Wait a sec. That's right. So BGS, so you got the G, HGA, right? CSG, again, you got the G, right? That's funny. Yeah. Why can't it be DRA? DRP, DRP.
That's it. We just need a new one. Come on, let's come up with different letters. And I think we're going to stand out.
Oh, man.
But that's a good point. I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I know who I prefer. And I think the market will tell us by prices, because that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. If I get less for my card after grading something and it's a 9.5 or a 10, I will never, ever grade with that company again.
Yeah. Hey. I know you're probably going to sign off pretty soon, but how's Chasing Cardboard going?
It's good. It's very good. Episode 7 came out, 8's coming out next week. 9 and 10 are already filmed. We've been talking about coming to Vegas for episodes like 11 or 12. So you and I have been talking about that. So that's going to be good. It's a grind though. You've been in media. You know how hard it is to make it work. And Mike and I, we feel the stress of the work that goes into it. It's so hard to get episodes out that are good. Thankfully, Matt's just so freaking talented.
Yeah, Matt is talented. He's an ace. Over here, I mean, what's that?
You liking it?
Oh, we love it. We love it. We're over here, me and the guys watch it all the time. Whenever you put out the new episode, and there's tons of good feedback. I love the show, man. I just don't stop doing what you're doing. Cause I love it. And I can't wait to see the next episode, but would love to have you out here in Vegas, and participate. But yeah, it's an awesome show, man. Keep it up. I love it, man. We love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one last question. And this is more disconnected from the national. What products have you liked so far this year? What are people coming in and enjoying as they open it, getting good value? So much junk out there. What are you liking?
You know, I'm gonna talk about the H2 products and the mega boxes, okay? So I think that there's a real future in those products because of the price point.
Okay.
And I guess in a lot of ways I'm talking about Panini right now. But if you can offer the everyday customer the opportunity to get a hit and be at $200 or so, I think that's super awesome and lucrative. And I've noticed a trend now, since things have changed, that those boxes sell so, so well. What was it that came out not so... Okay, so when Prism's a great product, right?
Yeah.
We had, you know, we get allocations of Prism. We have our direct relationship. We have our distributor relationship. We get the hobby. But those Prism mega boxes, the ones from Target that had the autograph in it, I could not load them fast enough. If I bought 10 today, the 10 would be gone by tomorrow. If I bought a dozen would be gone by tomorrow every time I got them. And, you know, there was a box like last year, or it was a 2020 box, but it was selling very good at the end of this year. The Contenders box with one auto,
yep.
Football. If you can get people a hit and keep them at about $200 or less, they love that. And I think Panini recognizes that. And I feel like some of those H2 products are going to be in that realm. Hmm. And H2 products were like, well, I know a lot of people that, you know, not breakers, a lot of hobby shops that were more interested in hobby boxes and not so much H2. But I think those are the products to carry moving forward. Volume and velocity. You have to have the high-end product for your big guys. We have that. We have that all the time. But, you know, we've got a lot more everyday guys than big guys. And I think those products are really strong. As far as baseball goes, Topps Series 1 and 2 with the home field advantage cards, I think that was a great subset. Obviously, they look like downtowns, right? I think those two products were really strong this year. Wander Franco, also very big driving force in that. But you know what I liked? Pristine.
Oh, okay.
Pristine baseball. We sold through it like water. The cards are gorgeous. It's been years since Topps, they do it with archives and, you know, signature series, you know, those one packers, yeah. But those are kind of, it's a different idea. This pristine product hasn't been released in a lot of years. And I think that is a big thing. I think brands that have rested for a while and they bring them back and refresh them and do like they did with pristine. I think pristine was spectacular. It's a great seller. It sells itself, and I love that product too. So that's my take.
Good. That's great insight. I wouldn't even have thought of pristine. So that's good. Good feedback.
Yeah.
Well, cool. My battery's going to die here in a second.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I want to do a proper closure here. Where can folks find you in the Awesome Card Shop? I'll put all the links in the show notes, but tell us where they can track you down.
Yeah. Hey guys, we're here in Las Vegas. We're on West Sahara, which is Sahara runs right with the strip. We are very close to the strip. 8125 West Sahara Avenue. And if you ever come to Las Vegas, we'd love to have you here. Honestly, took a lot of pride in building this new hobby shop. I don't think there's another one in the country like it. So please come down. You know, we'd love to have you and treat you to a good time. So, yeah.
Beautiful. And you are right. You have a one of a kind shop. I see it before, middle, and after, and it's insanely good.
Thank you, man. Hey, I hope I haven't been too monotone, man. I'm so tired from the national. It's like, no, I just like, please. Man, I'm like, yeah.
Go get some rest. Go sell some cards. Have yourself
all right,
a good
brother.
Week. All right, man. Talk to you.
Take care.